My name is Jonette Gay, and I'm the pastor of Otterbein United Methodist Church. I have with me today our media specialist.
Hi, Jason Burgess.
And we want to talk and we want to listen. Our faith is seen and understood in many topics. We're glad you've tuned in today to Hey Hey, anybody listening? I'm so glad to have Josh here with us, and Josh is willing to be on podcast, and I'm so so grateful. Now, what do you do for a living, Josh?
So by day, I am currently the vice president of loan administration for Community First Fund. So we supervise the credit underwriting, the loan servicing, and then the special assets for the portfolio. And Community First Fund is a nonprofit that lends for economic development purposes. So we make loans to borrowers and on projects that are largely forgotten by the traditional financial services industry.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Wow. Well, Josh is here on Monday nights here at Otterbein in our fellowship hall in our basement. And tell us about that.
So I am also a person in recovery. And so I had a drug problem from ages 18 to 21, and I saw it treatment. It was an inpatient treatment facility, went through, you know, the various levels of treatment, stepped down from there. And then for the last 18 years, I've been a person in long-term recovery, you know, abstaining from drugs and alcohol.
Congratulations on the 18 years.
Yeah, thank you. It's at 3 years, you're like, wow, this was really an accomplishment. And then somewhere around 10 plus, you're like, man, I'm getting old. You know, like 11 years isn't that much harder than 10 years, but it is a sign that, you know, I'm not a kid anymore.
Sure. Yep. So, and you keep coming, is it sort of a reminder or a refresher?
Yeah, you know, I got involved in the various recovery communities, and I participate in a fellowship specifically. Originally, you know, to help myself and to get sober. And it's really now, though, evolved to be the, like, center of my spiritual practice.
Okay.
And I still am involved to this day because it is still, you know, nourishing and rewarding for me to help people that need help.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm recently in recovery, and I had been going through treatment, and all the treatment had ended, and the recovery community that I was going to, I kind of didn't seem to fit, and it's just kind of interesting to sit here and talk to you because I'm thinking, maybe I should give it a try down there, actually. So
yeah, I mean, recovery itself is a microcosm, so there's a lot of different, but it really, you know, is important to find where you fit, because at the center of a lot of recovery is just connection.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I have found that a lot of times the details are different from person to person, but in some sort of abstract enough sense, you know, not everybody's been addicted to heroin or crystal meth or whatever, but everybody's experienced compulsion, experienced being out of control, experienced the hopelessness. And in a lot of ways, you know, it's just part of the shared human experience.
Just something about that, sometimes people don't realize they've experienced those things. And I know I often say everyone should go through treatment, you know, some kind of accounting treatment, you know.
Yeah. No, and it's, I think, tough for people to understand, but that 100%. you know, when I first got into recovery, I would say I'm, you know, grateful I'm in recovery. And I just meant that I was grateful that I wasn't waking up sick every day mm-hmm. or waking up with just, you know, all of the chaos that comes from being in active addiction. And at some point I became, you know, grateful, you know, that I had recovered. Like I found, you know, peace. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just not the chaos. I found something more. Now I'm, you know, grateful for all of it. Like I, being 18 years sober, I have a luxury mm-hmm. that not everybody does. Like I would never suggest somebody go out and get addicted to heroin. Mm-hmm. It's not a recommendation. But where I sit today, I think my life is richer and more meaningful for the entire experience. Because, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's allowed me to connect to people. It's allowed me to find a life of service and purpose. And I don't think that everybody necessarily finds that. And I don't think I necessarily would have just happened into it if I wasn't motivated to get out of the pain. So to this day, I'm grateful not just that I'm not in active addiction, therefore mm-hmm. in recovery. I'm grateful for the entire experience because it's that important to me.
I can agree to that, and I'm I guess maybe a little jealous that you had your active addiction at such a young age, because mine was I was far older, and the things that I learned in recovery and all of that. I am extremely grateful for and kind of wish I would have had that ahead of, you know, at an earlier point in my life. So, but
yeah, I mean, there's always something to be envious of, yes. right? Like there's always, you know, while I'm making wishes, I wish I had gotten sober and bought Apple stock. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, the process of helping people recover, especially in a 12-step tradition, you know, is one person working with another. Mm-hmm. And in the 12 steps, it's one person that has that experience. So somebody in recovery working with somebody that is not. And there's limits to my experience, right?
Sure.
Somebody comes in that's, you know, 60 years old that has been using the vast majority of their adult life, maybe the vast majority of their life. There's only so much a guy that got sober at 21 can tell.
Yeah.
So, I certainly understand envious or, you know, the desire for more, but everybody's experience has value to somebody else, mm-hmm. and everybody's story has value to somebody that's still suffering. Mm-hmm.
I know it's something that I was thinking about being grateful just either was yesterday or this morning, and I was thinking I need to get myself involved in somewhere where I am sharing that story, where I had been doing that all the way up for the last year and a half, and now all of a sudden I've become busy doing other things and thinking, oh, I really need that. I don't know, I'm kind of in between recovery groups, I would say. So
yeah,
I mean, it's kind of a strange naked place. So
now, I mean, at some point, it's. I mean, the point is to be happy, joyous, and free. It's to mm-hmm. sort of escape and move on. You know, my involvement in the recovery community has ebbed and flowed. So, you know, when I first started, it was all I did. It was all I had going on. There's no distractions and. You know, I have wife and kids and, you know, job and community commitments and all of that creeps in. But for me personally, I found as much as that stuff was great and meaningful, there was still something missing. And so in about 5 years where I wasn't actively involved. And, you know, for the last 5 years I have been. And, you know, I very much value that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just remember meeting people who had many years on them in the community and thinking, why would you still be here?
Yeah.
And I mean, they were there for me. So that's a good feeling to be able to be there for somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. No, similarly, it's at some point you're like, you graduated. Like, you can do anything. Why not go do something? And yeah, I you know, after a period of being away from it, I came actually to this church. I was in the basement, met a bunch of people I didn't know, a bunch of young kids that didn't have much direction, and you know, just shared a little bit about my experience and gave them some hope that things get better. And I just remember how excited they were. And
sure,
there's not really, like, that was the coolest thing that happened to me that day, that week, that month. And yeah, it keeps me coming back.
Great.
That's so amazing. I hear so much there that you're saying everybody needs connection, and what a great thing that is. That's so that's just so faithful, full of faith. Everybody needs connection, and you were saying we want to be joyous and free. I think there was a third word you used in there.
Happy, joyous, and free.
What a great image. Sometimes
understanding, and I don't have a sort of active church practice now, but I had grown up in a Christian church. And what I had taken away from the gospel was very much acts of service. You know, what resonated with me while reading through the gospels was Jesus going out and helping people that nobody else was helping. You know, helping the people that were sick, that were in the worst situations. And, you know, that's what stuck with me all these years later. So in my mind, it's an extension of that faith that I grew up in to go out and seek the people that have been, you know, neglected or shut out from, you know, the rest of society, and, you know, try to connect with them.
That is so Christ-like. I just, that just is the image of Christ. What a great takeaway that never left you is that Jesus was, it did away with the idea that you're unclean by association. You know, he was so incarnational in there, and not afraid to be honest. I think that's one of the things I like about recovery groups, just from what I've seen, is the honesty that someone said that evangelism really is just one beggar telling another beggar where to find food. That when we know our need, then that makes all the difference, and instead of feeling that you're superior, you know.
I like that. Yeah, that's a good metaphor.
But you've got, I just like that what you said about what you just said. That left me.
Thank you.
But I was wondering what you and Jason both have learned about yourself. What have you learned about yourself being in recovery? And I think that's a powerful way. I heard you say, now I'm even glad for it. That's just what is Bill Wilson said in God's Economy, nothing is wasted. So even the pain and the struggle is not wasted. It's been used or recycled.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering what you've learned about yourself through the years.
Do you want to go first, or do you?
I'll give it a try.
Not to put you on the spot.
No. Well, you're the guest, so you should have the last word. So the thing that I've learned about myself really is that the self that I thought I was not part of the world, you know, and that my self doesn't really have an identity without the interaction and the allowing it to be vulnerable for other people to see it. So I guess that's all I got.
Yeah, no, that really sums it up. That gave me goosebumps a little bit. You know, there's sort of, when it comes down to it, like what, you know, sort of got me sober was the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that connection comes from the vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of easy to have lots of superficial connections out in this world. It's much more difficult. And when I did it, it was the hardest thing in the world for me to say to another man, like, I need help.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing. And the rewards for taking that risk have been, you know, incalculable. It's given me a whole new life. And the rewards for, this is a reminder, I'm certainly not perfect at it, but for continuing to try and live that way has also been fantastic. And, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of touched on it, but, you know, there's the stigma that keeps people separate. There are the unclean that are, you know, very much looked down upon. I certainly did not feel like I was on top of the world when I entered treatment, anything but it is part of the human experience. Maybe not the specifics, but one of the facts I learned recently is, you know, they used to do the gastric bypass surgery a lot more frequently, and mm-hmm. they do it less now because they found it didn't have like longer term results. And they also found that 70% of people that had some sort of gastric bypass ended up with what's called a transfer addiction. So when they couldn't overeat, they would go out and overshop or gamble or, you know, whatever else. And so, you know, in the fellowship I'm in, we call it a spiritual malady. But it really is a lack of meaningful connection. And the manifestation of that shows up in all sorts of ways. In me, it was heroin. In other people, it's, you know, stealing. In others, it's cheating on their wives. Mm-hmm. It's overworking. It's working out too much. It's, you know, eating too much. It is hard to find a person that is not at least able to identify with one of those. And mm-hmm. there's a whole range of people have different levels of self-control, but even the person with the most self-control just still understands the guilt and lack of control that comes from, you know, not being in control. And when you make yourself vulnerable like that and open yourself up to other people, mm-hmm. A whole new world opens up to you. It's pretty, I don't know, amazing.
Yeah. That vulnerability and honesty. Brené Brown has written a lot about vulnerability and shame. And she said that sometimes after she's shared openly, she feels a vulnerability hangover. And I just know what that's like on Monday morning after I've exposed myself or shared my life in the pulpit. And then the next day I feel vulnerability hangover. Do you ever feel exposed, or do you feel it's people you trust if you share your story?
Yeah, I never heard that exact word before, but I totally get it. And I've had some practice, but I guess it's sort of like working out. Like the first time you go to the gym, the next day you feel sore. Maybe, you know, you do it more and more, you get more used to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we all have things where, you know, nervous about sharing. So
one of my dear friends is a spiritual director. He died a few years ago, and he used to say, he said, I would just tell people, you can know anything about me, and I say, so what? I'm already loved. He's always saying that God already loves you. So you can know anything about me, and I say, so what?
I love that. That's pretty cool.
Anything else that comes to mind when you think of one of my friends I talked to is in recovery, and she said, now I just want to sit in my recliner and have an ice cream cone. She said, used to, I would feel the least bit bored and then want to get high immediately. I was so afraid of being bored. That was the biggest fear of her life. Do you know anything about that? Or?
I love ice cream cones. Yeah. Well, I guess for a larger audience or somebody that's not, familiar with recovery, it's gotten a lot better, but there still is a lot of stigma. And that stigma keeps people sick. And so I got up this morning. I occasionally go to the gym, not nearly as much as I should. I go to work. Mm-hmm. Some days I go to a meeting. Other days I go home. I have two stepkids. I have a house that's never as clean as I would like it to be. 90%+ of my life is entirely normal. But it's something, I don't always share about because of that stigma. And then there are also people that are, stuck actively using now. They won't reach out for help, or don't reach out for help until the problem becomes so bad they can't ignore it because they're terrified of that stigma. So there are people in recovery. We live normal lives. You may interact with us and never know it. And then, if you or a family member or somebody else is struggling or headed in a direction or, does not have control over something, there's plenty of help out there. There's plenty of people that want to share their experience and, help you, but they can't do that unless you actually reach out. And so I think, getting over the stigma, makes us all better.
I just, I love that imagery of to ask for help. It reminds me of that old song, Lean On Me. We all need somebody to lean on. And swallow your pride. We all need somebody to lean on that. There'll be a time that I'll need to lean on you. And so I really think for our listeners, I hope that you will admit when you need help and that there's life on the other side. Right, Josh?
I love it. What a great message for everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So glad you were with us today, and I hope you'll tune in again as we listen to one another.